Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. Today is episode 180 with the title, Healing Begins with Belonging. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Tinia Eichenberg. Tinia is a mind-body energy facilitator who helps people clear emotional and energetic blocks to heal, transform, and thrive. And when I asked Tinia to describe her superpower, she said that it is being able to empower others to release what no longer serves and step into their most authentic selves. Hello, Tinia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
It's a pleasure. And I'm guessing from your accent, you're not in the UK?
Not. I'm in the States on the other side of the pond.
That side of the pond.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I'm in Maryland. Just outside Maryland. Of Washington, D.C., yep.
Been to New York. I've never made Washington State or anywhere around there. So, yeah, one day, maybe in 5 years' time. So it's coming up for Easter. You got anything planned?
My son is moving. My son is moving out of our home where my husband and I are going to become empty nesters.
Wow, exciting.
Yeah, so that's happening. We're actually going to start moving him and his girlfriend in today, and then they'll officially move everything in on Friday. So we're going to be helping them set up Friday, and then we're just going to kind of enjoy the weekend with some Easter plans with where we're going to meet his girlfriend's family. So that's exciting. Yeah, and then probably on Easter, we're probably just going to chill out. We're going to stay at a campground and just enjoy each other's company for a day.
I reconnect to each other as life partners.
That's one thing that we've always strived to make consistent throughout our marriage. We'll be married 29 years this year, together for 30. We have a 28-year-old daughter, and then our twins are 25. And we also have a granddaughter who's going to be born within the next week or two. So lots of changes going on in this next 2 weeks. But yeah, we always made it a point to put our relationship kind of the main focus of our foundation, because we knew that one day our kids were going to move out, and it was going to be him and I that were going to be left holding up the fort. And we wanted to make sure that we had a good foundation for when we went into that space, that we could support each other just as a couple.
Hmm. I mean, you're probably... So 7 or 8 years behind us. Our son was the final one to move out. Yeah, about 7 or 8 years ago. But yeah, our daughter's in her 30s, mm-hmm. married. Our son's he's in his 30s as well now, and got a long term partner which he's living with. So yeah, it's important to reconnect, isn't it? Because otherwise you'll sit on the sofa looking at each other, going, well, "What do we worry about? What are we going to do now?" It's a real strange feeling to go back to that time before children, BC,
right.
When you used to lay in on a Saturday morning and go, well, there's nothing to do today. We'll just lay around. We could do whatever we want. No one cares. If we don't go out, don't put any clothes on today. No one's going to notice.
It's right. Great, isn't it? Right. Yeah. Well, we didn't really have that couple time before. We started dating, and then 3 months later, I became pregnant. And then a year later, we got married. So our oldest was 6 weeks old when we got married.
Lovely.
So we've always had children during our marriage, and we really only we have never lived together alone. because we lived with roommates before I got pregnant. Well, actually, no, we lived with roommates when I found out I was pregnant. So we've always had somebody else there during our relationship, whether it was in utero or you know, as a big human. I mean, we've gone on vacations, just the two of us, but really never been longer than a week, maybe 10 days at most.
It's quite exciting then.
It is.
It really is a new chapter in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very exciting. But we're definitely very excited for it.
Yeah. No, my wife and I, we love our time together.
Yeah.
And we love it when our children visit, and we love it when our parents come as well, because we're at that sandwich generation. We've got responsibility for the elder generation as well as the, yeah. You can't get rid of responsibility no matter what age you are these days. So you talk about healing and helping others thrive. What got you into what you do and creating these sort of safe spaces for transformation within people?
I was looking for a safe space. In 2018, we had the most amazing year for our family, until this point where we are now extending our family into grandchildren. In 2018, both my husband and our oldest were graduating from college. Our twins were graduating from high school, and we were moving to our forever home right here, right off the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. And we have been wanting to move back to this place. And so I had this this vision of what it was going to be like, because in this community, I have my best friend was living here. Her family was living here. And this was the place I lived when I was 15 years old, when my dad got stationed in Maryland in the Air Force. And so this is where I met my two best friends. And it just had held a lot of memories and a lot of fun and a lot of love. And so I really wanted to move back here. And so we had the opportunity to do that when a friend told us that they were selling their house and would we like to buy it? And that was in like February or March of 2018. And we're like, well, you know, when you're ready, let us know and we'll start the ball rolling. And like June, they were like, okay, so we're ready to get the ball rolling. Is this still something you want to do? And we said yes. And so within 6 months of saying yes, we had done our townhome. So put it on the market. We put it on the market in September, sold it in October, moved in November. So incredibly quick, which to me, knowing what I know now about the law of attraction and energy work, when you're in flow, things move quite quickly. And that moved quite quickly. Downside was we were moving to the beach in the winter, which totally sucks because you can't enjoy sitting on the beach and wading through the water in mid-November. It's too cold and it's dreary and it's no fun. So we were kind of secluded from everybody for like the first 6 months. We'd go over to people's houses, but it just was not what I had envisioned. And then summer hit and we were able to start getting outside. But prior to that, I'd had a bit of a falling out with my mom. And it caused a lot of stress emotionally for me. And I started to self-medicate. I started to drink and smoke. I hadn't smoked for like 8 years. And I started smoking again, partially because I was around people who were smoking. It was easy access to this old drug that I used to use to hide my emotions, to relax through traumatic events. I started smoking when I was 13, so it wasn't hard to pick back up and remember how good it made me feel when I was feeling extremely stressed and emotional. And then, of course, I added in the alcohol because we're sitting on the beach, so you want to have your margaritas and all that stuff. And so I really suppressed a lot of things for about a year. And I knew that things were getting bad when I would start driving home from work and I would imagine what would happen if I just let my van run into a telephone pole. How would that make me feel? Could I get a few days off? Because I was under the mindset that I can't take vacation days because what if I get sick and I really need them? Or actually, on the flip side, I wanted to use them for vacations so that I couldn't use them for sick. That was probably more true than the other way. Like I wanted to be able to take an entire week off and go someplace and relax with my husband. And I couldn't do that if I took mental health days. Because I only had, at that time, I think I only had 2 weeks a year to take off, you know, and then your weekends are filled with stuff you can't get done during the week when you're working 40 hours a week. And I was working an hour from home. So I was out of the house for 10 hours a day, 11 hours a day, depending on what was going on that day. And so I got to the point where I was like, I'm thinking about hurting myself. I need help. And at the time, I only knew the traditional routes, talk therapy and medication. Because I grew up with a mother who was diagnosed bipolar when I was 7 or 8 years old. And that was the first time meditation was brought into my life. But it was never anything that was taught to me. It wasn't anything that was for an 8 or 9 year old to do. So, and then after we were living in England at the time when my mom was diagnosed, and she had to deal with her own mental illness. And so she didn't have the capacity to teach us kids how to handle our own emotions, our own mental health. But I had seen her go to therapy and she had been on medication for as long as I can remember. So I went that route and was on it for about 6 to 8 weeks. And both the doctor and the therapist, the doctor wanted to up my medication when I said it wasn't working so well. And talk therapy, it just felt like I was talking about the same things I had talked about for years with other therapists. Not saying that anything that they were doing was wrong. It just wasn't right for me. And I didn't feel like you asked about that safe space. I didn't feel safe enough with either of them to tell them that I had thought about hurting myself because I didn't know them. You know, sharing that you are thinking of hurting yourself or taking your own life with somebody you don't know is hard. Sharing it with somebody you do know is even harder. So, you know, think about what it takes for somebody to take their own life. They think that is the easiest option to telling somebody that they're thinking about hurting themselves. Because we have seen nothing but in the movies, TV shows, whenever somebody has said that they feel crazy or they feel insane or they're feeling certain ways, certain feelings, even if they're saying like, I feel like I'm going to hurt myself. The next scene is always them being in either a padded room or a room by themselves sitting on a bed. There doesn't seem to be, at least in the past that I have seen, a good representation of what happens if you tell somebody, I feel like I'm going to hurt myself. Have you seen anything that would encourage people to be okay with saying, I'm hurting and I feel like I don't want to be here anymore?
It's all caught up in stigma and shame, guilt, not being strong enough, not being capable enough. You know, I'm a strong woman. How can I be like this? I associate that feeling with other people, not with me. If I don't want to be a failure, I don't want to admit I'm broken. That's part of my, right. I think this is what you're saying to yourself, isn't it? Yeah. Part of the problem here is that I'm failing and to face up to it makes me feel more of a failure, having to admit it.
Having emotions makes us feel broken. And I'll be the first to admit, because I'm still human, that there are times when I try to still hide me getting upset. Now, my kids know that I'm a very easy crier. And when I'm watching movies that are very compassionate and heartfelt, they will be the first ones to look at me to see if I'm okay. And I'm always crying, because it's just how I feel emotions. But when I'm out in public, I will still find myself trying to push those down because I don't want the attention of feeling my emotions. But we need to feel our emotions. So it's a catch-22. It's like, how do you get comfortable with feeling your emotions when you're having them? It's really hard to do because you really do have to navigate how other people might react to you because they don't know how to deal with your emotions because they don't know how to deal with their own emotions.
When you were going down this I don't know if this is a good metaphor or not, going down this slope towards this, I suppose, this mental anxiety you were facing, or however you would describe it. Looking back on that time, can you see the triggers and the steps that were sucking you into that further and further? You, at the time, you were looking for alcohol, nicotine as ways of avoiding you dealing with the real problem. These were boosting brain chemicals that made you feel better about yourself or less worse.
Yes. Looking back, I can absolutely see how I was reaching for a cigarette first thing in the morning to help suppress what I knew would come up later in the day. I would sit out on our deck, smoking a cigarette, scrolling through TikTok, and just mind numb. I couldn't, every time my phone would ring and my mom would pop up on the screen, I could feel my body tense up. Anytime my dad would call, I would tense up because I'm sure it had something to do with my mom because my dad never calls. So it was, it was always, and I would always wait for, if it had been a couple of months since there had been eggs breaking, I would wait for the call that would cause me to have to walk on eggshells.
I think some of this links back to your family history of bipolar.
Absolutely.
These are manic episodes. So people around you would have realized that Tina's having a manic episode here, not knowing what to do with it.
I think I was definitely afraid of that, right? Because for as long as I could remember, my mom would always tell me that bipolar disorder runs in our family. You have a 50-50 chance of getting it. But I always said, oh, no, whatever my mom gets starts with her and ends with her. And I think that is, and this is where, again, our belief systems come into play and intentions come into play, because we don't have to inherit who our parents are. My mom also has several illnesses that are hereditary, but nobody before her has them, and nobody in my family is going to have it. It's not being passed down through me. And I think that has really helped me in moving towards the energy healing aspect of it, because through energy healing, you can clear out those inherited energies, those things that are passed down from generation to generation to generation. And when I told myself, I don't want to be on medication. I think medication is great for short term. And I know a lot of people are not going to agree with that, because a lot of people have had much success being on medications for the anxiety and depression for decades. And congratulations. I am so glad that you found something that worked for you. But it doesn't work for everybody. And it wasn't working for me. And so that's when I asked the universe, I asked God, whoever was listening, give me something that is going to get rid of this anxiety and depression. Get me something that is going to cure it. I was looking for a cure. I was not looking to manage my mental illnesses. I was not looking to survive through my mental illnesses. I wanted them gone. And that's when energy healing came into my awareness. And to be honest, I was skeptical at first, because it was the emotion code that came into my awareness. And if you haven't heard of the emotion code, it's using muscle testing or kinesiology to test your body's muscular system for yes and no answers, for truth and false answers, for your subconscious, for your body, for you alone, not anybody else. And so I was like, do I drink this purple Kool-Aid? Because I wasn't going to ingest anything, because that was the belief that I had had for so long, that I had to, one, give my power away to somebody else to heal me. And two, because my anxiety and depression I've always been told it's a chemical imbalance. And so if it's a chemical imbalance, then you have to treat it with chemical to rebalance it. But the emotion code required no medications. it required not ingesting any chemicals, which was exactly what I was looking for.
So is it your belief or your theory that a lot of how the body reacts is fed from signals from the brain? So if you reprogram your brain in a more positive way, I'm not saying it will cure everything, but it will certainly influence how the body responds. Is that the basic theory?
Yeah. Although I don't think that it is just about the brain. It is about every single organ in our body. When we don't feel emotions, I'm going to use just this lifetime, because I'm a believer that we don't only have one lifetime. I believe that we live as a soul that has lived on different timelines, different lifetimes, and our soul brings that experience into wherever we are today. With that, we bring whatever that soul is holding on to. So even though our soul is coming here to have a human experience, it's had many human experiences, and it brings all of that knowledge. But with that knowledge comes any trauma that they may have attached themselves to in those other lifetimes or in those other timelines, right? So it's very woo-woo. You know, a lot of people are not on that same wavelength. They think that we, you know, our brains are what's controlling everything. And once our bodies are dead, that's it, we're gone. But that's not my belief. So I think that our bodies hold on to so much. And from this lifetime, we can have trapped emotions stuck in our shoulder. We can have them stuck in our hips. We can have it stuck in our bladder. So it's not just about the mind. And even though our mind has been tested to be controlling a lot of what we do as humans, I don't think science has gotten everything right. It hasn't gotten everything to show us the big picture.
Yeah, I can relate to the concept that we don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And what we do know is based on largely on observation. And there are things we can't observe that just happen.
Right.
And if you want to call that spirituality, want to call that bigger beings, whatever, I don't have any proof either way. I'm not a religious person at all, but I do have what I would call a spirituality, a Buddhism without the religion sort of thing. It's, mm-hmm. it's about inner connection with the world and people and self, I guess, without any definition of what that means. My life is better when I'm connected with myself and my environment.
Right. And it's not just connecting with your mind. It's connecting with your heart. It's connecting with your entire being. And with that being said, when we do the conscious work, when we do mindset work, it does work. It does take quite a while though. I mean, when you are retraining your brain, retraining, really looking at your belief systems and asking yourself, do I still want to believe this? Do I still want to believe that the sky is blue? Right. Then you have to say, okay, so if I don't want to believe that the sky is blue anymore, what color do I want it to believe that it is? And how do I change my mindset around? Well, you've got all of these other people over here that are saying, oh no, but the sky is blue. And you've got yourself over here going, yeah, but is it really? Because some of it looks white. Some of it looks purple. It all depends on when you're seeing it. What time of day are you seeing it? So it can take a long time to shift your mindset into whatever it is that your goal is. When you bring energy healing into it to help to clear away those emotions or those stuck trauma energies, just these balls of energy, you know, those little prickly things you get on your socks when you walk through a field.
Yes.
So that's how I see energy, these trauma energies, these stuck emotions, these negative energies that are impacting our physical body as well as our spirit and our souls. When we find those, we can pluck them out. Problem is sometimes they're so hidden, like they're so stuck down in your socks, you can feel it, but you can't find it. Right? So in a sense, you want to take your sock off and you want to start picking them out because they're hurting you. But you can't do that with your body. You can't just take your meat suit off and pick out all the trauma energies. With muscle testing and charts, right? Just there's an emotion code chart that has like 60 different emotions. You can muscle test your body to find, do you have a trapped emotion of anxiety? And if you get a yes, okay, you ask, can I release it? And you might get a no, because you might need to know more about it. You might need to know how old you were when you got the emotion. You might need to know if the emotion is inherited, or did you absorb it from somebody else that you were standing next to? And if you need to know those kinds of things, your body will tell you. You find out what you need to know, and then you ask, can I release it? And then you release it with the emotion code, you swipe your governing meridian. And this is where, again, I was skeptical about using this energy work. It had nothing to do with, is it the devil? Is it entities? Is it anything like that? It had nothing to do with that. It was just the newness of what this modality was and how easy, really how easy it was to feel better. And that I didn't have to wait 6 to 8 weeks to see if I was feeling better. So yeah. So, you know, once you're able to release it, you get that, yes, I can release this. That's how easy it is to clear and release what's no longer serving you.
I suppose one of my core beliefs is that my entire reality is generated by my consciousness. Whatever that my consciousness is, we call it my program, my AI, my brain, whatever it is. So everything I look, feel, see, touch, experience has been generated from electrical stimulus into my consciousness. And okay. that creates a pattern or a process. And I also have a belief that how I process things is unique to me. And when you say the sky is blue, how I define blue in my mind isn't necessarily how you define blue in your mind.
Right.
We all interpret that wavelength of light in our own way, which is why some of us like these two colors together and some of us don't like those two colors together because there's a clash or whatever it may be. Taste, everything we experience is all based on our brains taking stimulus and processing them. In fact, this entire conversation is made up in my own mind. I'm being told that you're there because I can see you through my eyes. I can hear you through my ears. But those are just senses, and those electrical stimulus is going into my brain and the brain processes them. So I can support the idea completely that our consciousness can override much of what we think, feel, and believe if we learn to train it and focus on it. So yeah, everything you're saying there, I can believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and we start getting trained on what to believe the day we're born, right? Because our parents start to instill their beliefs in us right from the beginning. And then our teachers start to instill in us the beliefs of the school system. It's not until we get to be 12 or 13 years old, we start to question our own beliefs. And they call it
rebellion. Why phase? Yes. Why?
The why, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, was it like 3 or 4 years old when they start asking why?
Yeah.
Why? But then we become teenagers and we start to rebel against our belief systems.
Whatever. Yeah. That's right.
Right. Whatever yeah. Belief systems have been instilled in us. Our kids did it. We did it. It's just a part of being human is figuring out who you are. However, if you are in an environment where the belief systems of your parents are continually being instilled in you, it's very hard sometimes to change your belief system until you get out of the house. And once you do that, then you can really start to figure out who you are if you have the opportunity to, if you allow yourself to. Problem is, we hold so much judgment about ourselves when looking at other people that it's very hard to figure out who we are if we're not encouraged to do so.
Yeah, because if we're not careful, we swap our parental models for other figures of authority mm-hmm. in education, in our friend group, in government, in whatever it may be. And we can take this left-hand fork and go one way or right-hand fork and go bad. And so we're all one decision, a left-right decision away from changing our lives for the better or for the worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So with these, when you find these energies in our body, sometimes we have to know the exact location, sometimes we don't, but letting them go frees up that space in your energy, frees up that space in your physical body, and allows your body to heal the way that it's meant to. Our bodies are incredibly restorative, but when they're holding on to so much trauma, and if you tell me that you don't have any trauma in your life, you're blinded. everybody has trauma. Everybody has been affected by it in some way, whether it is watching your parents go through trauma, being bullied at school, or told by a teacher that you're not good enough because you got a C on a paper, or you know, going through high school and wanting to date a particular person and that person not giving you the time of day. We all go through traumatic experiences. It's just a matter of whether our conscious mind remembers it or not. But your body is always going to remember.
So what's the process that I can start to connect these energy dots to either traumas, feelings, emotional baggage, stress, anxiety? Because presumably there are different techniques for different parts of the body, different situations. Mm-hmm. You can't just say it's one formula. Here's some energy. You've got to tune in, have you? You've got to tune it and focus it.
Right. So first I would suggest that you learn how to muscle test. Because this is the easiest way, at least in my opinion, because it's how I learned, it's to get in touch with your intuition, to get in touch with your subconscious and start testing it with foods. So to do a sway test, you're just going to hold the food against your body and you're going to ask either out loud or in your mind, does my body want this? And if you sway forward, typically that's a yes. If you sway backwards, typically it's a no. But your ego is going to get in the way in the beginning. So you have to practice it and you have to be consistent. When I started learning muscle testing, I was doing with a sway test, I was probably doing 20 to 30 tests a day. And then when I wanted to switch to doing muscle testing with my fingers, I went to doing like 100 questions a day. And it's just based off of the sensations in your body. So start with that. Just very simple. Test with food. And I will tell you, I guarantee anything that comes out of your cabinet is going to be a no. Because our bodies don't like processed food. So choose processed foods versus fruits and vegetables and kind of gauge it that way. Once you feel like you have that, you're confident in that. And this builds confidence in ourselves as well. Because you really get to know what you want as a person. Because you start to feel the sensations in your body. You can sit there, close your eyes, and ask your body to show me a yes. And you might get, you might get goosebumps. You might yawn. You might have to take a deep breath. You might shiver a little bit. But your body will tell you yes or no. It's just a matter of tuning into that.
Is some of this moving it from unconscious decision making to conscious decision making? So we're trying to get our prefrontal cortex engaged here by saying, I want slowing down the thought process and leaning in or leaning away. It's all about being mindful about that decision we're making rather than just grabbing, going, yeah, I'll have that, whatever, and then regretting afterwards. Didn't really fancy that. What did I eat that for? So it's having that conversation with yourself before you do something rather than living with a regret afterwards.
Right.
Is that kind of the approach?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can always go against what your body wants too. I mean, there are times my body does not like Reese's peanut butter cups. I guarantee every time I ask, does my body want this? I get a no. But my mind still likes the taste of Reese's peanut butter cups. So I will still eat them. Because I'm human and I enjoy them. But once you learn that process of understanding what your body wants, either through muscle testing or through your intuition, then you can start to ask, do I have a trapped emotion of loneliness? And if you sway forward or muscle test with your fingers and it locks strong. So I use the ring to ring method. So when I get a yes, it locks. When I get a no, it releases. So you can do that as well. But when you get that...
Presumably, you can also evaluate the strength of that resistance
right,
as well.
Exactly.
So I'm a little bit bothered or I'm a lot bothered.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can use muscle testing to ask, do I have a trapped emotion of loneliness? And if you get a yes, then you ask, can I let it go? Can I release it? Can I transmute it? Well, whatever words come to your mind. And if you get a yes, then... you say, okay, I release loneliness. Or if you're practicing the emotion code, you can, if it helps, you can sway, you know, rub across your, your governing meridian. You can use a pendulum, whatever works for you is what's going to help you to heal. And that's what I want.
So trying to link some symbolism yeah, to the event.
Yeah, you can snap. You can snap if you want.
I'm letting it go. I mean, I often have a mythical piece of paper, which I scrunch up into a ball and throw it in the bin. I don't need to be dealing with that. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So it's whatever, symbolic.
Exactly. Whatever you can, you can take a deep breath and blow it out real hard. Whatever empowers you to let that stuff go. And this is what I stress to my clients is that we have the power as human beings to heal ourselves from everything. We do. But the question is, how deeply ingrained is whatever it is you're trying to heal? How deep does it go? How long might it take to heal? And is it in your highest and best to heal that? Because you may be trying to heal, like right now I'm working on healing my hypothyroidism. I'm working on healing my thyroid through energy work because when I take the medications, I don't feel better. I don't feel worse. I don't feel better. My labs are better, but I don't feel better. And so it is in my highest and best to work on my thyroid energetically, but it might not be my highest and best to address, say, my eyesight. It might be that is just part of the human experience that I'm supposed to travel through by having to use readers or get glasses. And I may not be able to heal my eyesight, right? There are things that we may, as human beings, are supposed to learn from through this human experience. I'm definitely not against medical intervention. I don't want that to come across as that I don't think that doctors are valuable, because I think they are incredibly valuable. Problem is, one doctor does not know your whole body.
Yeah, I think you have to appreciate there are things that you have within your control and there are things you don't have in your control. And even when you're going to the doctor and getting medication or whatever it may be, you still have to take the medicine.
Yes.
I still have to put my glasses on.
Yeah.
I can't expect my eyes to be fixed without putting my glasses. So I take some personal responsibility to take the tablet every day. If I don't, it doesn't work.
Right.
There's an agreement with myself and the person that's helping me.
Right.
To allow that to work. And I have to believe in it. Because if I don't believe that it's going to help, I won't take it. I won't do it. I won't get better.
Right. And that's the same thing with energy work. You know, to a degree, you have to believe in it. You really do. To a degree, you have to believe that what you're doing is helping you. And that's why addicts have a hard time sometimes quitting taking drugs, because they truly believe that the cocaine is helping them.
Hmm.
Right.
Well, it also applies, if you have a strong faith, religion, or belief, that helps you, and it's strong enough so that it manifests itself really to you, then why am I going to deny that that works for you? Because that's your way of processing your, call it energy, call it whatever it is, the self-healing, the self-reflection,
mm-hmm.
is whatever works for you. But you're right. I gave up smoking 21 years ago. I gave up alcohol 3.5 years ago, and I've cut back on eating a lot for the last 2 years. So, yeah, I was a lazy eater. I just eat whatever in front of me. I'm the person who goes to the buffet and ends up with a plate that's like a mountain of all the food that comes back. Alcohol, I had no stop button. I was drinking and drinking and drinking, and I was the one at the party who was the one who didn't want to invite at the end. I was always the embarrassment one. And I had to look back at myself and say, who am I? Who do I want to be? Because if I just carry on not engaging in my life and just letting it run itself, I don't like it. I don't like that person. It's not me. I'm seeing a facsimile of me, not me. I had to take a decision. Stop smoking. Stop drinking. And think about my calorie intake. Because if I don't do it, no one's going to fix it for me.
Right. Right. Yeah. And to your point, you have to do what's right for you. right? If I break my leg, I'm going to the doctor. I'm not going to try to heal it through energy work. I might use energy work to help reduce the pain and maybe speed up the healing process, but I'm still going to go to the doctor, right? Because that's a bone break. But there are some things like, I don't feel like I need to take medications for my cholesterol. That I can fix through energy work and through diet and through exercise. Healing is not just one faceted, like you were saying. You have to, you know, you were focusing on your physical health, right? The quitting smoking, the quitting drinking, the eating better. That's going to be your physical health. But you also have your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health. You have these five pillars that you need to address to become the healthiest version of you that you can become. You can't just focus on one. And that's one thing I learned through this process when I got in, when I found energy healing, that wasn't enough. Because it took me about 4 months to heal my anxiety and depression about 80%. But I wasn't taking care of myself on those other levels. I wasn't setting boundaries. I was still a people pleaser. I wasn't trying to eat as healthy as I could. I was still smoking when I started on this healing journey. I only just quit smoking last July for good.
Okay, well done. Well done.
So I smoked for about 5 years after I started smoking again. I just recently quit alcohol. I think December was the last time I had an alcoholic drink. So it's a process. We're not going to do it all at once. And you do have to work on everything. People can tell you all the time, you need
to stop smoking, stop drinking. The government tell you, there's labels on cigarette packets, labels on alcohol saying it's going to kill you. You go, kill me tomorrow, maybe. Not today. We don't believe. We're not going to change because someone tells us to. We've got to find that why, your own why. Why do I want to stop for?
Yeah. And all you can do is when somebody says that I'm ready to heal, then you can support them. Support them in their journey. And if they slip up, don't mention it. Like, why is it any business of ours to ask somebody?
Because then we'll stop bringing shame, stop bringing pressure.
Just support them wherever they are. If they tell you that they're going to quit smoking, great. 6 months goes by and they haven't quit smoking, it's none of your business why they're still smoking. It's your journey. You do the best that you can do, and you do you. Don't let anybody influence you. And I'm at fault for that sometimes. I'll have conversations with my husband because he'll mention his back hurts or he's feeling fat or he's gained weight. And I am a Libra. I am a caregiver, and I am a person who loves to give unsolicited advice. That is one of my toxic traits, is giving unsolicited advice. But it comes from a place of love and caring and wanting to help.
Hey, but on the flip side of that, you now get paid to give solicited advice. So you can balance it out, can't you?
Yeah. But I have on occasion asked my husband, what are you going to do about it? And I've had to stop myself as soon as that comes out of my mouth, I turn right back around and go, I am so sorry. It is not up to me to ask you those questions.
No, but create space.
It does.
So that you can ask yourself that question.
Right. Because everybody is a reflection of us. And what we want to help other people with is often something that we need help with.
My wife, Marie, and I, we've noticed over the last 18 to 24 months, since we've been very conscious about our food intake, trying to lose weight, that our daughter and our son and our son's girlfriend and to some extent my mum have all started embarking on a healthier or conscious mindset about what they're eating, and also maybe drinking as well. And we haven't had to fat shame or point out the fact they've got a few pounds because we were in that position. But I think they can now see a positive example of two people who have taken a choice, embarked on it, and they can visibly see the change in us and the progress we've made.
Right.
So we haven't got to do anything other than be the best people we could be, exemplify good practice and let them absorb it. But whilst we had a gluttony problem, we were creating the environment in the family where it was okay to be gluttonous. And I think by saying, actually, we're not advocating for that anymore, it rubs off and people go, oh, that's great. You give me permission to do it to themselves. So I think you could become infectious in your your better behavior as well, can't you?
Right, because then your outer world starts to look like your inner world. So you focus on you. You know, we are our first job. We are.
It's the old saying, isn't it? Put your own oxygen mask on first before helping others. Yeah, it is.
We're our first job. Take care of you first so that you can be there for others.
But is that maybe the mistake you were falling into was trying to be the mom to everybody and fixing everybody else and letting yourself...
Absolutely. It wasn't until I realized that I really needed to look at myself and figure out how can I create a space where I am happy with what I have. And that's when energy healing came into my life. That's when self-care really started to show up, that it was something that was needed. And, you know, my self-care was relearning how to be a emotionally intelligent and healthy minded person. It wasn't about going for weekly massages or getting my nails done or even showering. It wasn't even about that. It was more about allowing myself to worry sometimes or to be sad or to be mad. It was about learning how to set boundaries with people who continued to cross them. And I didn't even realize they were crossing boundaries that my subconscious had made until I started to really question, what are my boundaries?
Yeah, I suppose unless we plot out where those things are, then we can just become uncomfortable when someone transgresses them without realizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody makes you frustrated and resentful, they're doing something that is pushing your buttons. They're crossing your boundaries. And that's a good time for you to stop and go, what is it that they're actually, what are they doing? What boundary are they crossing? For a boundary that I set with my mom was I sent her an email and told her that I was not going to respond to any emails, texts, or phone calls where I was feeling manipulated, bullied, or belittled, because she would send emails in bright red capital letters, like she was yelling at me. And I told her that if she did that, I wasn't going to respond to anything in the email. She stopped emailing me, I guess, you know, for whatever reason, but she did not cross my boundaries, which was amazing. So people will not cross your boundaries if you set them. But if you do set them, make sure you have a consequence and uphold that consequence.
Mm. You say in the show notes that you said through about this light bulb moment where people realize they have the power to heal themselves. Surely there's a light bulb before that, which is recognizing that you need to heal.
That's the first step.
Yeah, the first step. So people listening to this right now, yeah, our listener out there, how can they maybe self-identify about this need to heal before we talk about that I have the power to do it?
So if you are feeling frustrated with life, you're feeling like life is always happening to you. You're always, you know, you're running into the wall. Right? Every time you try to do something, this wall gets put up. That is when you realize that there are things in you that probably need to be healed. And like I said, you may have had a wonderful childhood and you may be, you know, I don't know, 40 years old and in a very happy marriage and just think that life was actually really grand, but you keep hitting walls every time you try to move forward to do something. There's probably things in there that need to be healed that you don't remember. And again, that's where energy healing comes in and is so helpful, because you don't have to remember. You don't have to relive what you've gone through. But if you're feeling frustrated with life, relationships aren't going well, you know, just sit back and just think, is there something in me that I need to address on a deeper level? And your conscious mind will say, no, there's not. Your ego will say, no, there's not. But if you're human, there's something to heal if you're feeling frustrated with life.
So obviously reaching out to you is a good option for the next stage. But how can we maybe think about our own first aid, our own triage to help us on this journey from realization to taking our own power? What can we do there?
Start with self-care. Start with really looking at how are you taking care of yourself? Where on those five pillars are you not taking care of yourself? And pick one. Start with, I would start with emotional. Emotional or mental is where I would start, because those are going to help you move forward in that physical, spiritual, or energetic, those energetic pillars. But start with one of those and figure out what self-care you need to help with those pillars and start there. I would love to say, start by calling me. But my goal as a coach is to empower you to know that you can heal yourself. I'm just a guide. I can help you to release some of those energetic blocks. I had energetic blocks to self-care. And so I had to work on myself energetically before I could do the self-care work. But there are a lot of people who can do the self-care work with some ease. And then you become consistent with it. And then you can add in all the other stuff. So start with the self-care. Start by putting you first so that you can take care of others. And I will tell you, I will be blunt, if that means you have to get up an hour earlier and go to bed an hour earlier, then that's what you do. I love it when people tell me they don't have time for self-care, because I will find you the time.
Yeah, it's the old adage, isn't it? You've always got time for things you want to do. You never have time for the medicine. You never have time for the pain.
Yep.
So if it's important to you, you know, you've realized the light bulb's come on, the first bulb, I need to do something. Second light bulb fires, I have the power to do it myself. And that is, I have to take personal responsibility, because right, no one's going to do it for me.
No. And
until it's a priority, it will never happen.
Yep. And I call myself out all the time. I don't hold myself accountable for a lot of things. I'm still growing. I'm still learning. I'm still healing.
But we shouldn't beat ourselves up.
No.
We should just recognize what's going on. Say, yep, well, I made that choice today.
Yep.
If I don't want to make that choice tomorrow, that's within me. I can make a different choice tomorrow. But I made that choice today. As you said earlier, am I leaning into that or am I leaning out from it?
Right.
How am I feeling?
Yep.
If I've leant into it, I can't beat myself up because it felt right.
Exactly.
And the day you have that light bulb, because actually that's not me tomorrow, then you lean in and tomorrow is different.
Yep. Yeah. And just take each day as it's the first day. Really. Don't worry about tomorrow, because that's where anxiety comes from. And don't worry about what you did yesterday, because you can't change the past.
I've not been drinking alcohol for about 1,200 days today. Each day I don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
I have the choice tomorrow. I can. Yep. I can have the choice today if I want. But I've chosen today I'm not going to. And I keep making that choice. I'm not denying myself. I've just made that choice every day. And I actually make that affirmation with myself every morning when I wake up. No, I don't say at the end of the day, have I drunk? I start the day by, I'm not going to have a drink today.
Right. Yeah.
And you can make that choice every day. I'm going to be doing this today. Not what did I do? Because it's too late to correct it then.
Yep.
So I made that positive start.
Yep. Absolutely. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's been absolutely a wonderful conversation. It's been mind-expanding. How can people get hold of you? So our fabulous listener who's got all the way to the end, how can they get hold of you?
You can go to my website, designyourexistence.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at Design Your Existence. And on all of your podcast platforms, I have my own podcast, The Metamorphosis Project.
Fascinating. I'm going to have to tune into that. I'll put all the details in the show notes so we can find those. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I've loved this conversation.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.